This is Data Citizens Dialogues, your guide to bringing trust to your data, decisions, and all things AI. For Calibra, I'm Thomas Brents. All right, fun episode alert. If you didn't know already, this is Data Citizens Dialogues, and I am Thomas Brents, Vice President here at Calibra. I just crossed over my year mark with the team, but I'm certainly not new to this space. I've been working to help data governance leaders tell their story for well over a decade at this point. And I first encountered this next guest, gosh, it's got to be 6 or 7 years ago at this point. You guys, I'm sure you know her and you love her. Let's listen in to my conversation with the data governance coach. Nicola, thanks for joining us here today on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Why don't you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Oh, well, Thomas, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's an honor to be here. So, as you say, my name is Nicola Ascombe. I'm known as the Data Governance Coach, and I help organizations understand and manage their data better. I am really lucky, as well as doing coaching and consulting for my clients. I run lots of training courses because I always feel it's really important to give people the skills to make sure that data is used properly to solve problems and you know, make better informed decisions would be great. So, yeah, I'm very lucky. I love my job.
Well, you say you're lucky. We're lucky to have you. Greatly appreciate you and your time. I can only imagine the amount of data challenges, issues that you've helped organizations through. One that's top of mind to me recently is all around data sharing. And by that, I mean helping team A get information from team B so that they can make some great decisions, move forward, drive business value for their organization. Can you tell me a little bit about how you define data sharing and why it's important to, you know, your customers, the people that you work with?
Yeah, I think that is such a great question, Thomas, because I think often when people hear the words data sharing, they go, well, that's nothing to do with data governance because it's us sending data out to, I don't know, a supplier or a customer or another party. And they're not thinking about the fact that data sharing is going on inside their organization every day, all day probably. So from my point of view, I tend to think it's all about sharing and making data available to others. And I think you could kind of expand that and say both inside and outside your organization. But I think the internal is what gets overlooked and people really forget that because if you're not thinking about that as a proper activity that's got a label, it's got a name called data sharing, then you've got all sorts of duplication of effort with people. You know, I'm sure you've come across similar where, you know, the same multiple teams are cleansing and fixing the same source data that they've had an extract from and not cleansing it exactly the same way, coming to different answers. And then we have all sorts of wasted time and debate over things. And we get these multiple versions of the truth or even terrible mistakes happening. So I think actually having an understanding that what you're doing when I say, yeah, sure, Thomas, you can have that data, is actually data sharing, and we need to just not make it hugely onerous. We don't want to stop people doing it. As you know, that's not the whole point of data governance, but make people think about what they're doing and follow a simple process to make sure they're doing it right.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. As a dad, right? Every best practice you have in life starts at home first, right? It starts with being able to share across your own teams, making sure that marketing can get information from finance and they can rely on it, right? Because you've already put those governance practices into place, right? But every journey has challenges, doesn't it, right? Challenges, roadblocks in order to get to success. Why don't we talk about a few of those challenges that you've seen with some of the clients that that you work with?
You made me think of one, actually, just as you were saying that about finance and marketing. But I was actually thinking of a client I worked with many years ago, where, you know, if you don't have this common language, people don't know what you mean. They think they do, but you mean different things because we don't have a data glossary or a data catalog that has the agreed understanding. And I was working with one organization and the head of the actuarial team came and said, right, you're helping us do data governance here, aren't you? And I said, yes. And he said, will you go and beat up finance for me? And I said, why have I got beat up finance? And he said, they're giving me this data and it's wrong. And I said, okay. And in what way is it wrong? Well, it's calculated on the wrong basis. It can be calculated in two different ways, and this is the wrong one. And I went, okay, and you're telling me because... And he went, oh, so you can go and beat up finance. And I went, have you tried telling them the basis that you want it on? And he went, well, they should know. And he got really grumpy. And I think this is quite common. And it's not something that I think people think about, but then they're just expecting the provider of that data to be telepathic and know what data was meant. And I think this is all an issue about not having a common language. And I think most organizations are so way off having a common language is unbelievable, but we need to start somewhere. And I think getting people to start thinking about, if I come to you and say, Thomas, I want this data, you know, it's perfectly, not only is it perfectly acceptable, but you should be saying, you know, exactly what do you mean by that, Nicola? You know, please specify that. Point it out in the data catalogue to tell me that I know that's exactly what data you want. And it's not just that. I think quite often people get the wrong data because they don't know the right data is even available. So they'll settle for something that's substandard. It's something that is calculated on the wrong basis because at least it's vaguely the right data kind of thing. Or even knowing where to get the right data. I did some work with one organisation once and I was helping at the very early stages. So I was interviewing stakeholders to try and identify their data challenges. And I said to some lady, you know, I can't remember what the question was, but I just remember vividly her sitting there going, see, the trouble is what you have to do is decide. It's speed over quality or accuracy. And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, well, it depends on who I ask. There's three teams and they vary in degree of the speed at which I can access the data to the accuracy. But if I want it accurate, I have to wait 2 weeks. But if I want it really quickly... I can get it tomorrow. And there's a halfway house option as well. And, you know, this is crazy. We need people to be thinking about, you know, when I'm asking for data or getting data from you, is it the right data? Is it good enough quality or, you know, fit for the purpose I want to use it for? And then you have all sorts of other challenges that are probably less data governance, but, you know, I'm biased. I think putting a good data governance framework in protects you against lots of things. But you've got like your data protection, data privacy issues. Should the person who's asking for this data be allowed it? Is it sensitive data? Do we need to be encrypting it? You know, what kind of technology should we be using to transfer this? Now, I'm not an expert in those. They're not data governance. But I think this is where data governance can provide that framework for you to tick off and make sure you've asked the right people the right questions before you can do anything.
Yeah, it becomes foundational, right, to everything that you do. And I think most importantly, in some of the examples that you provided to us, right, about people just talking to one another, having a common set of language, knowing which teams are going to give you the right information or the accurate information, right, it all kind of points to a data culture, right? Let's talk about why building or establishing or just cultivating, right, keeping the data culture itself going, why is that foundational to data sharing?
Well, I think it's even getting people to understand in the first place that what they're doing is sharing data. I think until you've started down that data culture, data literacy road, the vast number of employees of your organization probably don't even think that data is part of their job. And if they do, it's probably that kind of inconvenience, that necessary evil, that thing that makes their life so much harder because the data's never quite there on time or complete or not the right data kind of thing. So I think having this culture approach really helps people to start understanding that data is an asset, and it doesn't matter whether your organization works in, say, financial services, where data is the only asset. I mean, we don't all have a bank account that's a separate safe with our little pile of money in it. Our bank accounts are only data. So, you know, financial services, we really, really wish they had a data culture. But all the way through to making things, things go wrong because we got the wrong data about components or, you know, the quality of them. So, but people don't think that data is one of their assets. And I find that very scary for financial services, but they don't think that. So this data culture starts people understanding that data is an asset and we need to manage it the same way we do our other assets. And I think one of my favorite analogies when I'm talking about that is, say, most organizations have a building of some kind, whether it's an office or a shop or a factory or a warehouse. You can ask anybody in that organization, is this building an asset? And they'll all kind of look at you like you're stupid and go, well, of course it is. Don't be stupid, Nicola. Why are you asking that question? And because we know it's an asset, we don't wait for it to fall down, for holes to appear in the wall or something. We have a maintenance team or a facilities team, whatever we want to call them, and they go around regularly and they check things. They check that fire alarms work, that smoke detectors work. We don't wait for ceiling tiles to fall on people's heads. But that's kind of what we do with data until we've got this data culture. And I think, you know, until we've got some kind of data culture and understanding that data is an asset, you know, I kind of would even go as far as saying that data sharing is downright dangerous because nobody's thinking about what they're sharing.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And we make it sound so damn easy, don't we, right? Like it's just, hey, start having a different culture, getting people talking about data, right? Just doing, what are some of the like, the easy things, the tactical ways that in particular data governance leaders can get you going in the right foot? What are some of the frameworks or just, you know, the instant first steps that would pay dividends here?
Well, I think the instant first step is to train everybody in your whole organization, but we know that's not instant. So we've got to try and find ways of how do we get that message out there? And I think I've been very successful in working with like senior stakeholders to ask questions, scare them, make them realize that if somebody gives them a report, it doesn't mean that it's correct. And I think a lot of senior people just say, Thomas, is the report right? And if you're a junior person to them, you're going to be crossing your fingers behind your back going, yes, that's fine.
Of course.
I want to kind of give them some examples of what maybe has gone wrong, where data hasn't been right, make them realize that unless we've got data governance in place to give them that comfort, that it might not be right. So I want them to start asking questions. So the next time somebody says, here's the data you asked for, they say, how do I know this data is good enough? So ask the right questions. Ask, you know, is it documented anywhere? Do we know, how's the quality of this been measured? So I like to kind of, and they're a small number of people, so I can train them, brief them very quickly in like a half hour training session to scare them, then give them the right questions to answer. And then that gives us just the senior people are asking the right questions to start getting other people to go, ooh, if they're asking that question, I need to be ready to answer it.
I feel like you got a story in there. I feel like this has come up a time or two.
Once or twice.
Tell me a little, yeah. Tell me a little bit about an example. One of those, you know, junior folks that goes to the senior exec and says this is accurate, but it becomes the impetus for the entire, you know, data culture, data sharing, data governance movement.
Well, the one thing I always comes to mind when people ask me that. I can't tell you who, I can't even tell you what sector in case you could work out who. But it turned out to be the whole trigger for data governance was that a board was given a report on the profitability of various departments, divisions in their business. They were looking at which were profit making and which were loss making. And one of them just jumped off the page, clearly loss making. So they made a very serious decision to close that part of the business down. It got a huge amount of negative press here in the UK. So it was a number of years ago, but I signed an NDA. I'm not allowed to say what actually happened. Sure. Huge amount of negative press. They found out 6 months after they'd closed it down that whilst the data in itself was not exactly wrong, it was skewed by some other data being included in there. The part of the business they closed down was not loss-making, it was profit-making. They'd had a lot of reputational damage as it was, and they thought they'd have even more if they kind of went, oops, made a mistake, we're reopening it, rehire all the staff that worked there. So it was actually their trigger that actually made their board question every single piece of data that was given to them and made them start data governance and people start understanding that data is not these annoying report things, and but actually it gives us huge insights into our organization.
Ah, God, that's awesome. I love that example. And it really, it points to, you know, one of the things that we're getting at here today, which is data literacy, right? So how do you get people, again, you had brought up kind of common language before. How do you put some practices in play around data literacy, whether it's training, whether it's courses, like what are some of the things that organizations should consider, again, before they start getting into sharing data?
You know, there's all sorts of things you can do. And I would always recommend training. Well, I'm biased, but I come from, you know, that's kind of what I do for my job. But I don't mean like, you know, everybody has to go on a day-long training course. I've done data literacy training for clients that's like 20 minutes long. it really doesn't need to be long. The very beginning is the data culture piece. I always think that data culture and data literacy are kind of the same. And I'd been doing data culture training as part of rolling out a data governance framework for years before the term data literacy was coined. And sure. I remember a friend coming to me and saying, oh, we've got to talk about data literacy because I'm so worried. I don't understand it. And I went, well, of course you do. You've been doing it for years. And then she went, no, it's a new thing. No, it's not. It's just a label that's been given to it. And as part of data governance, we've been doing that initial part of it. I mean, data literacy training can go all the way through to advanced analytics. But I think that the very first level, that an understanding that this is what data is, and this is it's valuable, and this is what I, as an individual at this organization, should be thinking about around that data, that kind of sits very nicely in the data governance warehouse kind of thing. So it's something that we should be doing. But I think, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, training has to be all singing, all dancing. And to be fair, yeah, I have worked with some amazing, you know, the whiteboard animation companies. And you know, I've done the voiceover and the script, and they've done these most amazing videos. And we've had videographers interviewing stakeholders. Well, that's for people with big budgets. I've done something as you know, cheap and cheerful as me doing a recording of me talking over some basic PowerPoint slides. Or I've even helped my client design that themselves so that they can deliver it. You know, I think there's something you can do on all budgets. I think people tend to go, oh yeah, well, the examples you see online all tend to be, if you've got some budget, you can make such a difference. And if, well, you know, while you're getting that rolled out, because you're going to have to talk to a lot of people, look at every other way you can get the message out. You can be really creative. Most organizations have induction training. I frequently, in the days where I used to act as like an interim data governance lead, I would be introducing myself to HR, finding the person responsible for that, asking if I could have a little bit of time in it. If it was live, that took some negotiation, but quite often it's a booklet or, you know, a guide that's given to people. Well, if you're saying, I want to do this and I'll provide the input, very few people say no. And you can do something really simple. I used to like doing things like data quality principles, because if you call it data governance, people go, ooh, that sounds awful. Call it data quality principles, personal data quality principles, and say, you know, you're responsible for making sure you capture data correctly and enter it into our systems, and that you report it if something's wrong and you can't fix it. See, nothing. These don't have to be onerous. People tend to kind of say, oh, we've got to come up with 10 principles. I had 3 in a lot of the things I was doing. Nothing. We just want to start dripping this in. And if somebody else is doing perhaps a new system's being implemented and somebody's doing some training for that, asking if you can write a little bit to go in that about what the importance of putting the data in accurately. And then the other thing I would do is, if you're having any new systems implemented in your organization, I would talk to the people who are doing the training. Every new system implementation will have some training, and say to them, can we put a little bit in there about the importance of putting data in correctly? And who to contact, what to do. So it's all about getting that message dripped out there. Because even if you've got the most amazing budget to have the all singing, all dancing training, that's only 20 minutes in somebody's life. You still got to do all the other stuff. It's just getting that message in there all the time and find ways of communicating. Talk to your communications team, who's responsible for internal comms. What campaigns and things that they already got planned, can you jump on the back of them? Because to say, oh, we're doing a data culture piece, but if we can say, oh, well, that's happening, can we add a bit about why data is important to that, so that it's very subtle, so we don't have to do a big this is data and it's important campaign, although it'd be lovely if we could. But we just need to, even if we get to do that, reinforce it with that little message everywhere that we can get it.
I love that. And it's, you know, we talked about some of the best practices around building a data culture and engaging with some of the business departments, right, to get them going in the right direction. But it's all change management, right? It's, you're doing it one way. We need you to start thinking about it a little differently, right? That all kind of plays into it. But how do you get the stakeholders involved, right? Like, because if you're going to change something, right, a stakeholder has to be standing shoulder to shoulder with you to actually enact that change and get people thinking like, okay, great, the boss is on board. So how do we get stakeholders involved in this whole data culture, data sharing movement? Yeah,
by some sheer fluke, this is exactly the topic of conversation with the coaching call I had with a client yesterday, where she's got some people that have done data governance in a team, another organization, and they feel like it's all about going telling people what they mustn't do with data. And they're not getting a very good reception. As you say, it's all about change management. This is not about going around waving a stick at everybody saying, don't do it like this. So we were talking a lot about understanding what's in it them for them, for the stakeholders. I think once we've had our epiphany and we become data people, we just think everybody else had their epiphany the same time and they understand how important it is. They're not where we are. And it's very easy for us to just to slip into the what I'm going to do and what I want you to do. And it's not, it doesn't mean anything to the person you're talking to. What we've got to do is get them to understand what's in it for them. So that is hard work if you're the person responsible for rolling out data culture and data literacy, unfortunately, because unless you work in a very small organization, that's a lot of different people. Now, I can't go through everybody in the organization and come up with a different message, but I definitely need to do it probably by department and possibly even with teams within it if they have very different things. But we need to talk about the business value, the outcomes of having this data culture, about looking after our data better and then sharing it better and correctly, not talking about the, we should do it correctly and here's the checklist and we should do all this. So we need to say, you know, we need to be asking questions like, you know, so when you get that data from finance, how does it go? And they say, oh, well, actually, they always send us the wrong one on the wrong basis. So we have to go back to them and then they get a bit stressed. And then it's always the time of the quarter when they're really busy. So they won't give us the right data for another week. And then we've lost time for our deadlines. And you kind of, you pick up on all of this story that they're telling you. And then you say, okay, so how would it be if they gave you the data that was correct the first time and you don't waste this right. week and these all this stress and hassle of arguing with your enemies in finance? And they go, wow, that'd be amazing. So we're talking about something they want, not Nicholas putting in place a very rigid data sharing agreement and you must follow it. So it's always changing the language about what's in it for the people you're talking to. And so I like to find what I call a data quality horror stories. So the one I shared earlier about the business closing down part of their operations. Well, that's like the ultimate in data quality horror stories.
Sure, but
there's really small ones around and you start adding them up. You go and find out, you know, how much time does your team waste on finding the data, cleansing it, fixing it because it comes wrong before you can use it. Or you have to get it from three different sources and one's always late or something. So you start having those horror stories and you start saying, ah, well, these are what I can solve. Or you don't have to find every horror story in your organization. Goodness, that would probably take years. There must be so many of them going on. But you find a few and you find some for every area of your organization, because once you share them, it will trigger something in somebody's head and they'll say, ah, so is this an issue? And I had that in one organization where it was a student actually on the team. So the most junior there are some very clever people on the team. And I'd been talking about data and its importance at a team meeting and he didn't say a thing. But he turned up at my desk afterwards and said, you know what you were talking about, that thing? And I said, yeah. And he said, does this count as like a data issue? And he started telling me about a particular circumstance. And I said, well, yes, it was. Why didn't you say earlier when I asked if there were any examples? And he went, well, I've only been on the team 6 months and, you know, the others are really senior and clever and I didn't want to look stupid. And I went, but it is, and you're going to solve a lot of problems if we can get it solved. And we did get it solved. So we can't talk about we must do data culture, we must do data literacy and we must do data sharing properly because we're just there standing on our high horse and our ivory tower preaching again. And it doesn't help anybody. We need to make it real. What will this solve for them? What will it save in terms of time and effort, mistakes, rework, you know, upsetting customers, getting customer complaints, all those kind of things?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, right? I think anytime you're dealing with something that has a change management aspect to it, right, being able to kind of drill it back to what was it like before? What was it like now? Right. And sometimes that stuff is binary, right? Like, could you get the report before? No. Can I get it now? Yes. Some of it is being able to solve for the horror stories, like, well, you know, X, Y, and Z will never happen again. What are some of the, you know, kind of the proof points, the KPIs that you know, all the way up to the highest stakeholders, right? What are some of the things that at the top they really care about? Because, you know, sometimes it's, well, you've made my team's life better, but what are some of the real big measurables that people can start to drill to beyond the adoption numbers or the culture? Like, I got 500 more people involved with data that weren't in it before.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because I was talking to somebody recently who was telling me that they are monitoring their data catalog to see how many times it's looked at and by total number of users. And, you know, in some ways I was going, well, that's really cool. That's great that you can do that. And then the other part of me was being devil's advocate going, well, so what? what is it solving as a result? And I think it is so hard when it comes to KPIs, because we save money in so many different ways by solving these problems, by having this data culture and literacy, and particularly around the data sharing. So in some ways you could say, yeah, the number of times we look at the data catalog could be an indication that we're now sharing the right data, that perhaps we've understood the quality of it, kind of thing. So, but I think sometimes it's has to be a bit more qualitative rather than quantitative. Or if it is quantitative, it's not one KPI that we can measure time and time again. I think my clients tend to get really upset that I can't say, here's your list of five KPIs, go and use these. Because sometimes it will genuinely, we'll be able to put a real hard cash number on it, because we've saved, I don't know, five of Thomas's hours every week. We work out how much you earn, and then we can round that up and go, we're saving this per month, because Thomas doesn't have to waste that 5 hours every week now. And that's really cool when we can do that. It makes such a difference, because senior stakeholders love numbers that tell us that we've reduced costs and inefficiencies. We can do the same with time savings and things. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's reputational damage or customer complaints, so customer service. So I think what we have to do is always look at what have we solved. So one of my favorite things ever, which sounds really sad, is a data quality issue resolution process, because it's only by we need to, from a data governance point of view, we need to track and manage these centrally. We need to go back and fix the source of them, not keep manually doing data cleansing every time we want to use that data. But what we want to do is start actually looking at what we've done to solve them and shout about those. And some of them will be qualitative, but some will be numbers. So I think I can't say, here's the list of KPIs, but we can, you know, every month go through and look, we save these and these were the following impacts. And some will be quantitative and some will be qualitative.
No, it makes total sense. And now today we talked a lot about some of the kind of the business aspects of it, change management, setting up culture, talking about, you know, data literacy, getting people talking in the same language, the want and the desire and the needs to share data across. But let's talk about why and how having that strong data culture with now more data literate people can help with the technical side of data sharing.
I don't think that data culture training and even having the most amazing data sharing process is going to make all of your business people suddenly very technical. But I think what it will do is make them very good at articulating what they want and what they need when it comes to data. And that's going to make your technical team's jobs so much easier. So whether it's like the data engineers creating a data product, you know, they don't want to build a data product if only Nicola wants it. But if we can get everybody, as you say, talking the common language and articulating what they want this data for, then you can enable some more technical people to have that oversight and say, ah, now that's a data product that would be needed. So we'll go out of our way to create that one. So I think it just facilitates those conversations. It breaks down those silos between the technology teams and the business teams, because quite often I see situations where it's like a them and us. You know, we don't talk to them and it's all the other side's fault kind of thing. Whereas actually we're all on the same side. We're all trying to do the right thing for our organization. We just don't always talk the same language. But if we can all talk the same data language, amazing things happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. Especially if you know the end goal, right? We talked a little bit about KPIs. We know success. If we could paint the right picture and we all start talking in the same way, right? As we start to set up whether it's a data marketplace or some way to actually facilitate the data sharing internally, whether it's the data engineers building a data product, as you said, if we can all set up the same guidelines and we know where we're going together, then we can all kind of swim in the same direction versus, I don't even understand what Steve is asking for, you know? Mm. So greatly appreciate that. I think that's spot on. Of course, all of this has been spot on, Nicola. I think your experience across just a wealth of examples, a number of clients, has been immensely helpful. Is there anything else you want to add? You want to offer to our audience here today?
The only thing I can think of is that I think this question about where do we even start with data sharing, and also how not to make it too onerous, because you know, I think things are getting really dangerous now. We have things like ChatGPT. People just go and ask. And just for fun, just before this, I thought I would ask it, what would it tell you how to do? It's really lengthy and really wordy and really scary. But I've kind of made my whole thing about making data simple. So I do actually have a checklist on my website for a simple data sharing checklist, for particularly designed for internal, not necessarily sharing outside your organization. You might want to be a little bit more onerous for that, but that's available freely on my website.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that that's available, and we'll make it available here to our audience as well. Hugely appreciate you coming on here, Nicola, telling our audience, again, so many tactical examples, great pragmatic experiences, things that they can leverage in their everyday life and start to change the way their organizations think about data so they can share it across teams. Greatly appreciate you. And thanks for being on.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
All right, always fun to get to talk to Nicola. Her tales from the road are just so much fun. She's worked with like every big name out there. And what I appreciate most from her is her dedication to pragmatic advice. And so in that spirit, my big three takeaways are, and up first, having a common language is the foundation of successful data sharing. In order to get the data you need, you have to be able to talk the same talk as your peer. Sometimes we think of data sharing as like an external thing, as in I'm going to share this information with, say, a partner. But really, data sharing kind of starts at home. It's all about someone in marketing needing end of the quarter sales data. If you can't use the right words to describe what you need, you might get the wrong data. Language, it's important. Okay, second one. Without a strong data culture, data sharing can be kind of dangerous. You see, successful data sharing occurs when there's a strong data literate culture, where people understand the value of data and where they treat it like they do their other assets. Lastly, data literacy breaks down silos between the technology team and the data team. I've seen this so many times. Getting everyone on the same page makes them all feel like they're on the same team. They start to talk about problems in a similar way. And if we can discuss our issues more freely, we get to solutions faster. That's it. That's all I have today, folks. I hope you've enjoyed my conversation with Nicola as much as I did. And as always, for Calibra, this is Data Citizens Dialogues, and I'm Thomas Sprentz. Thanks for listening. Want even more insight into managing your data? Visit calibra.com/podcast for additional resources on the topics covered in our show. Be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Enjoy what we have to share? How about a 5-star review? At Calibra, we absolutely appreciate your support. Data Citizens Dialogues is a production of Calibra in collaboration with Stories Bureau.